This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Welcome to Psych Tech, the psychology and technology podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Dunlap, and my co-host is Josue Cardona.
Hey, Kelly. I love wearables. Woo!
You love wearables. Yes, you do. I feel like it's the start of a Dr. Seuss book.
We haven't talked about wearables in a while, so I'm very excited.
Yeah, we had a, if you're not familiar with wearables, we had an episode sometime last year, and it was all about wearables. We talked about Fitbits, we talked about Rise, we talked about all sorts of things. Pregnancy wearables and all sorts of really amazing things. So if you're not familiar with wearables, you should definitely go check that one out too, because today's is specifically about the Fitbit.
Well, not just the Fitbit, like a very specific application of the Fitbit, right?
Right. So we're drilling way down.
Yeah, yeah. And anything that I read, well, I don't know. Let me start us off, right? So there's a university in Oklahoma called Oral Roberts University who has this kind of, I think it's really interesting, physical fitness requirement. And apparently since the 60s, they've required students to log their physical activity and a certain number of, or a certain kind and amount of physical activity was required to pass certain classes. And so starting right now in January, so just a couple of weeks ago, they started requiring, I mean, the requirement hasn't changed, but the way they track it changed by using Fitbits. And I think, I didn't see this anywhere, but I'm guessing it's the Fitbit Charge HR.
Yes.
Which is the, right, that's the version that actually measures your heart rate and your steps, which are the two things that they require for this class.
Yes. I was genuinely surprised when I saw that a university had a fitness requirement to begin with. Because I think about PE and I think about, you know, going to high school. I don't know about you. I tested out of PE because I was that morally against it.
I always had excuses. I was a great actor in middle school and high school.
Well, I played a lot of sports, so I thought it was pretty dumb that I would have to do PE when I'm obviously still very fit. Anyway, I tested out of it. They gave me a B, so I have lots of intense feelings about mandated PE. But the fact that they can mandate it at the college level, I thought was very interesting. And apparently, it's not a new phenomenon. I found some research that in the 1920s, over 90% of universities had a physical fitness requirement for graduation. And today, as of 2016, it's less than 40%. So it's really been on the decline, which made me feel a little bit better that I'm not just out of the loop. It actually is not as prevalent as it used to be.
So your video game design program doesn't require physical fitness?
It does not. I am not required to play Just Dance or Dance Central or Wii Fit or anything like that. I do.
Oh, that's exactly how you would do it. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be perfect. They should require it. Is there an elective? I'd take that elective.
We actually have an elective right now that's health games, but that's about designing and creating and marketing them as opposed to actually playing them.
Gotcha.
So this idea of mandating physical health requirement to graduate, I had some really strong feelings at first of, oh, hell no. And I've been working really, really hard over the past week trying to quantify why that is. Because I had this inherent, like, creepy initial reaction to it. What did you think when you first saw it?
So I do not like the idea of a physical fitness requirement, but I do support their, you know, the idea that the school has is like a whole student or, whole body requirement. So it's actually a Christian school, so there seems to be a spiritual aspect. They, you know, it's a school, so they are, you know, improving the mind, and then they have a physical component, which is things like this. And at least, you know, the university, you're not you're not forced to go to college, and you have different options, right? Like, you would only apply to that university. I mean, you wouldn't apply to that university if you knew about that and you were against it. So I think it's okay that it exists, especially for people who really care about that stuff. And I have, you know, listened to people who talk about, you know, like, even wanting to be around other people who care about physical fitness. And you know, that's a whole culture. So I think it's okay. And they seem to be very upfront about it. It's not like one of those things that surprises you when you show up, because they're very, very vocal about it. And they're also very proud of the fact that they have that requirement. So it was interesting to see how they handled the news. And even one spokesperson from the school said, you know, just go to another school if you don't want to go, if you don't like this. And I got to agree with that.
So yeah, there was, my initial thought was, you're 18 years old, you can't force me to do anything. But on the other hand, you know, my college, my college or university made me take English and science and all those other things. So I can, I have a better feeling towards it now. Because there are obviously a lot of schools that you can choose to go to. They're upfront about it. It's not like it's hidden. Probably one of my biggest concerns is that the school is keeping the data. And I don't know about you, but my universities can barely pay me on time. I'm not quite sure I trust them to keep any kind of data safe, much less something about how active, what my heart rate's like, things like that. So that's all. Then again, that's just kind of a general concern with any technology, is you're pretty much always being tracked and you're always being recorded. But the idea that the school does it, it just makes me worry, because there's a lot of discrimination that goes on in schools related to health issues. So I know, I'm not going to name the school, but I had a friend at a university. She was suffering from depression, and the school made it incredibly difficult for her to graduate. They kept trying to impose these different standards or these different health, quote unquote, health measures on her that either prevented her from going to class or from graduating or for fulfilling the requirements that she needed to do out of, quote unquote, concern for her mental health and well-being, even though that was against her wishes and what she wanted to do. And it added all this other stress, and it elevated the situation. And I worry about that, because when I started researching this, I looked into, well, is this a normal thing? Do a lot of schools have these kind of requirements? And there was a school, I believe in Pennsylvania, and this was 2009, so it may have changed, but they had a fitness requirement that if your BMI was over a certain number, you had to take these fitness classes to graduate. And if your BMI did not drop, you could not graduate. And I find that just bone-chillingly reprehensible.
Yeah, so like the body mass index, that's one thing that's like really controversial, because people's builds are very different. So at the extremes, I see how you could probably use that as a measure of whatever it is that they were trying to measure. But on those, you know, those categories where it starts changing to overweight and to obese, like if you're on those lines, I mean, there's a lot of variation depending on body type. And it's not considered like the most, like the best type of measure for anything like that. So I can see a lot of, just in general, using that is alarming. But I can also see a lot of issues with having to use that.
So that's kind of an extreme example, but that is how I kind of black mirrored it up. If we took it to a more extreme idea, because again, you know, women have a lot harder time losing weight than men do. So you could almost claim gender discrimination there. But going back to the idea of using the Fitbit, I was actually amazed that the students were required to buy their own Fitbit.
Okay, so I wasn't, because at $150, that's not very different from a textbook.
Right? Yeah.
And they sell it at the store, so it didn't seem strange to me.
Jose,
I had no problem with that.
When you had to buy a $150 textbook, did that make you happy?
No, of course not. But I mean, I'm just saying, it's just another example of that. Like, and that's kind of how I see everything that they're doing. It's just like an electronic version of something else that we've already seen. And that, again, it didn't. It, of course, it's another $150 that you have to spend. But, you know, graphic calculators were expensive, and books are expensive, and all sorts of stuff.
All I'm saying is that I never, ever bought a book at full price. There's half.com, there's eBay, you know, there's an entire racket behind the pricing of textbooks and the reselling of textbooks.
Maybe you can buy a used charge online.
Maybe you could.
Yeah.
But
you could.
So I'm having a hard time with this, because on logically, in my cognitive bits, I understand that, one, it would be a huge help to both the students and the administration to have this cataloging of a physical activity electronic. I can't imagine trying to count my steps or how much activity I did every day and then write it down on paper and have that paper and turn it in. That seems like such a waste of time and energy. So I get that. But I don't know, there's something that just makes me really uncomfortable about a school placing your academic success, your ability to graduate, on how many steps you take. And I'm not saying it's logical, because that's yeah. The emotional part of my brain talking is it's I don't know, maybe it's rebelling against my PE teacher that I hated in high school. I don't know.
So imagine if the requirement for the class was that you had to I know I had to do this in school. I had to run a mile under a certain within a certain time. And somebody has to be there, watch me do it, and then take the time, mark it down. If I didn't do it, I have to do it again. Swimming class, you had to do a certain number of laps. Like, there were all these requirements that make sense within a physical education class. And same thing, like if you took a weightlifting course, like things like that. I mean, it varies, but they're like, how do you track that, right? And one of the things that I found interesting was that students were annoyed. Like the way you described it, yeah, it sounds really, really stupid. Like, what if I lost my journal? Does that mean that everything I did for the first half of the semester is lost, and I have to run that again or walk that again? Like, how does that even work?
Right.
So they wanted an easier way to do it, and since it seems to be such a big part of the culture, I mean, you know, it doesn't seem like there were conversations about getting rid of that. Just like, how can we do this? How can it be easier for us? And it seems like a cool solution because – so the way that it works is that they are using the Fitbit. So they can't just choose whichever one they want. It has to be the specific one because then they come home. You have a Fitbit, right?
I stopped using it a long time ago because I lost the charge cord, and Fitbit is dumb because you can't use a standard USB or micro USB. You have to reorder their specific cord. And I'm just too lazy for that. So I'll be honest.
I owned the first Fitbit. It was just called the Fitbit. It wasn't. Now the closest one to it is probably the Fitbit One. It kind of just clipped on, right? The Fitbit Charge is a bracelet, right, that monitors everything. And anyway, so you have to come home and you upload the data into the Fitbit server. And so this is the cool part. The school has their own – it sounds like it's their own whatever platform that they use, like a Blackboard or whatever. They said it's called D2L. And it feeds from – like you give – inside Fitbit, you give it permission to give information, to communicate with D2L. So D2L goes in and asks, is this available? Like, did they do this? Is this there? Like, we pull that data. It takes it into D2L, and it's automatically factored into your grade. It's 20% of the grade of the class. So there isn't a teacher looking over it. It's just D2L, their grading system, pulling from Fitbit. And so I guess as the user, what you have to do is you have to, you know, every time you charge it, you hook it up to the computer, it usually uploads all the data, clears the cache on the device, and then you give permission for Fitbit to share with the university. So it seems like they took a lot of people out of the equation, right? It doesn't seem like there's a teacher even looking at anything, really, because it's all built in. I'm sure they could see something if they wanted, but it seems to be all built into just their grading system.
I don't know. I still feel really uncomfortable about it. So sorry, Oral, I'm not going to go to your school, which I'm sure breaks your heart.
So wait a minute. So, you know, the two things that they're tracking are steps, right?
Steps and
heart
rate.
So just how many steps and heart rate. So what part of that, like, is there anything, like, it's not GPS. It's not tracking where you are. It's just tracking how much you move throughout the day. And then the heart rate requirement is for measuring some sort of sustained activity. So you just didn't walk around all day. You actually did some sort of intense physical activity at some point.
I gotta fight the man, Josue. That's about all I can really. I wish I had the words to express better the revulsion I feel towards it. But it really is just about. I've already thought of three or four different ways I could cheat the system. I'm not even lying.
Yeah, no. So, put it on your dog.
That's exactly one of the things I thought about it. I would totally put it on. Well, if my dog doesn't actually believe in moving, but I would get a dog that does.
Or attach, a cat, probably
attach
better.
The Fitbit, yeah. Go to the dog park, throw the ball once or twice, and then I'd get my steps at least. I don't think it would record the heart rate. I've thought about several different ways that I would cheat the system, which is, again, probably more a reflection of me and than anything else. Because, you know, as psychologists, as mental health people, we know that there is a mind-body connection and that treating your body physically in a healthy, respectful way does, you know, translate to having a healthy state of mind and having just either very concrete, like brain function, or less concrete emotional regulation and those kinds of things. And it's really well established that exercise has these benefits. But I was curious, I wonder if forced exercise has the cognitive and emotional benefits. It's going to have the physical benefits because you're using the same muscles. But if I'm standing there going, I hate this, I hate this, I hate this, am I going to get the cognitive and emotional benefits? I couldn't find anything specifically on that topic of quote unquote forced physical education, forced exercise. But we do it to kids. I mean, we do it to all kids in grade school, and PE is a mandated part of like every, you know, 12 and under, or, you know, grade 12 and under school. And the idea behind it, the psychology behind that, is that if you can get kids to adopt a habit, they're more likely to carry that habit into adulthood. So if we can get kids actively engaged in exercise and healthy physical behaviors at a young age, then they'll bring that to being healthy adults. But I don't really see that actually coming true, because there's been a lot of kids who have gone through physical education, and I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, so by tracking steps, you're tracking walking, right? So if it's a big campus or if you live off campus, you're probably doing the majority of those steps just doing your day-to-day. Something like, you know, if you live in a big city, you're probably walking more than somebody who's driving to work every day or lives in the suburbs. And so that takes a part of it, right? And that seems to count because they're not saying specifically what you have to do. And when you say forced exercise, I'm thinking like they put them in this torture chamber that has a treadmill on it, and they have to, you know, and somebody's whipping them while they're running on this treadmill for their dear life. Like that's probably what PE feels like to a lot of kids, but that's not what seems to be going on here. And again, it really is they are opting into this, these particular students at this school.
Right. Right. And I guess that at the end of the day, they have given their consent. So my creepy panopticon fears, you know, can be assuaged. But
take a step back.
You know, getting your heart rate up, which what I did find very, very interesting is in the article, which we'll share in the show notes, is that premarital sex was not considered an accurate reason to have an elevated heart rate. They explicitly said that because it is a religious school that doesn't believe in premarital sex. And so that made me start thinking, well, how do they know? How do they know it's sex at all and two, premarital sex? Like, so that, again, the panopticon kind of comes back a little bit.
When you're sinning, your heart rate is a little different than when you're out of sin, than when you're not sinning. Yeah.
I'd like to see the journal article
science.
Of that.
That'd
be fantastic. but I mean, yeah, the Department of Health and Human Services recommends 150 minutes of aerobic exercise every week and 75 vigorous minutes of exercise every week. So, and again, the connection is well established, but I think we're finding, you know, with the advancement of technology, the fact that you can wear something on your wrist that costs as much as a textbook and can track all this, and the charge can do so much more. It can track your stairs. It can, how many stairs you've climbed. And that includes incline, which I think is pretty cool. And it can track, if you want to put it into the app, what you ate and what you did and what exercise you did, which is really cool. But I also, again, worry about people who can't. You know, for example, if someone's in a wheelchair, how exactly does their step count work?
So they addressed that, right? They said that anybody who can't do, who can't actually do it because of whatever reason, right? So they acknowledge, you know, the Americans with Disabilities Act has protections in place, and we will work with that person to do something that is equivalent. So, like, they're still accepting, it said that all new students are required to use the Fitbit with the exception of anybody who has some form of disability, but that older students who were still taking classes that had that requirement could opt in to use the Fitbit instead of the old journaling thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still, you know, there's still both options available. And they seem to be, again, it seems to be so ingrained in their culture that it's not something that they are, you know, it's not a foreign concept to them that they may have a student who can't meet the requirement as it's written, and they're willing to work with them.
Again, I totally own that it is my own obvious, deep-seated, personal dislike of PE and being forced by the man to do anything that is coming through. But as John can attest, I've definitely taken it down a couple notches because I was really upset and not very happy with the idea. I've come to terms with it a little bit more. Again, the main reason being consent. You know, the students are consenting knowingly and informed consent to have this happen, which, of course, as therapists, informed consent is incredibly important to us, that they know what they're going into and what kind of weight it carries. Although I think 20% is, I think it's really high. I mean, most quote-unquote participation grades are like 5, 10%.
But well, again, that's not participation. Like, that doesn't count coming to class and whatever other assignments and things are happening.
And if I remember right, it's actually a class that they have to take every semester. I think if I read that correctly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. It seems to be only required 100% for like the 101 version of the class for freshmen. But it seems to be that all students, like, you know, there are more advanced versions of the course that have the same requirement, but I couldn't find either if it was required every single semester.
All right. Well, I think I read an article in USA Today that said there's a course and it meets once a week and it is every semester.
Okay, but yeah, it's possible.
I might be misremembering. And then I just wonder how the heck do you have time to actually do college courses if you're spending, you know, because there's the class day and then there's the quote-unquote lab day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you usually take three courses a semester, and if one of those is always taken out for PE, I don't really know how that academically works. But, you know, that's a little bit beyond what we're diving into today. So
yeah, and again, it depends on like the school. Again, it seems to be such a big part of who they are that that's just like it's built around that requirement almost. And, you know, my bachelor's degree, I had a lab for almost every single course at one point, you know, beyond just the basics. And, you know, and I mean, you know, the program is designed to kind of make time for all that. They're okay. They are okay, Kelly. They're going to be okay.
Okay, so I usually don't read the comments. But there is one on this article, and it validates my feelings, and it says, OMG, talk about panopticonism. Yes, I didn't even know that was a word, and now I do. So I don't think it's that extreme, but I think maybe where my hesitation comes from is this idea of pathologizing weight. And again, I don't think that's exactly what they're doing, but I think I just see it leaning that way or other institutions picking it up that might not apply it in the way that Oral Roberts is. Again, this idea that somehow weight, you can't be healthy at any weight, quote unquote. You have to be in this specific body mass index range or you have to do a specific number of things. I mean, for some people, 10,000 steps is nothing. For other people, 10,000 steps is a lot. And I couldn't find whether they specifically tailored the goals of to the student and the student's needs, which again, I would feel better if that was part of the process. It's just not clear whether or not it is. But yeah, this pathologizing of health, which I guess is kind of a paradox of, you know, fat is bad or fat is unhealthy or overweight is unhealthy. And I really guess I fear fat shaming or body shaming of any kind, especially in psychology where we see things like bulimia and anorexia and binge eating and the kind of things that happen when you are concerned with your outward physical appearance to the point where it can become pathological. Not saying that that's what this is doing, but again, I think I'm still in my Black Mirror universe taking everything to a further extreme than it might currently be.
Oh yeah, you're like, there's a special type of Kelly on the show today. Yeah, because none of that is even suggested in any of the reports about this requirement. But I do think that if you have a school where probably everybody is in some sort of athletic geared program and everybody is super fit, that it's more likely to happen, because then people who are overweight would be a minority, and I could see a really bad culture growing from that. But the requirements, they're not extreme. So, and you could be overweight and still do 10,000 and do a little bit of elevated heart rate work, you know, a couple times a week, and still be overweight. I see it more as a, like some offices or workplaces or even some schools have, like, you know, they don't sell candy or they don't sell soft drinks or something like that. Like, you try to do what you can. That doesn't stop anybody from going home and drinking, you know, bottles and bottles of Pepsi and, you know, lying on their couch and eating Cheetos, binge watching Netflix. Like, but
when awesome.
You're there, yes, but that doesn't, you know, you do what you can, where you can, when you can, if you can. And it seems like they are allowed to do this. And again, I think if you're interested in something like that, so, and I want to flip it a little bit and ask you, so you've bought a Fitbit. I've bought a Fitbit. Most recently, I had a Basis until it broke, and I didn't replace it with that same model because there are models that I like better, but that are way more expensive. So now I have nothing. but there are reasons why we've seen these as positive. So do you see any? And I do have a few things to say about this, but I want to know: do you see any potential benefits to implementing something like this, not only at this university, but like in other places, in other areas, and making it more widespread?
I think it's important to be as healthy as you can. I think it's Fitbit makes it easier and can make more apparent.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
I mean, if nothing else, getting rid of all that paperwork, like, praise whatever, because that alone would be enough to drive me away from something. It's having to do that much paperwork and that much tracking. So I think that is a definite benefit for the students.
I thought you said it was making it easier to be fit, and a Fitbit doesn't do that.
No. I mean, like, as far as being aware of your level of activity, and mm-hmm. then being able to translate that from what you did to, like, instead of having to journal it, having it actually in a digital form. I think that is very helpful for those students, and I hope that it reduces some of their stress. I can see positive applications of it. You know, for example, if you're tracking heart rate, I would be really interested to know what the standard resting heart rate is around finals and around midterms, as opposed to maybe the start of the semester or after a break. But I don't know if they're going to be using that. It didn't sound like they had any kind of scientific research angle to it, which again is fine, because again, consent is the most important thing in the world. But I could see benefits coming from it. I know you've mentioned it a couple times. If people wore their Fitbits in the workplace and you could track their level of stress, their heart rate, and really show that, hey, interactions with this person really are damaging, mm-hmm. or this environment really is toxic because look at these biostats. So I can see positives. And I really do think it's the focus on health and my fear of it extending. Maybe it's gamification that's got me scared this way. Like a lot of people think, oh, we'll just slap stars on it and it's going to be the same thing. And it's not. So I think if you're going to have something like what Oral Roberts is doing, it has to be incredibly specific and incredibly honed on what it is that they're trying to achieve. I guess they've done that okay in this circumstance, but I worry about it being applied a little bit more haphazardly other places, like that Pennsylvania school that said, oh, your BMI is over this, you can't graduate.
Yeah, the BMI thing seems messed up. And I do find it ironic that you, like, the first benefit that you proposed, right? Like, oh, we can have this data regarding all this
stuff. Because I'm a nerd.
I know, but it would require it to be more intrusive than it is right now, because then it would require to track time and location for any of those things to happen, right? Maybe not so much location, but definitely time, possibly location.
But then it's for science and not just an educational requirement, but for science.
I know. So here's a question. If you were to, let's say you're a university now, right? Your program. They're like, all right, we have a pilot program. You can opt in, or Yeah, something like that, right? Like there's a program you want to go to and they're like, but we're doing this thing and it's required. Like if you want to participate in this, it's required that everybody has to wear this device that is going to track your information and we're going to do all sorts of cool studies on it. Would you agree to it?
I'd have to see the informed consent form and about what is being collected, how it's being collected, where it's being stored, the security precautions for its storage, when will it be... basically anything you do for research. I mean, as psychology people, I'm sure you can agree with this, Josue, we're used to giving our bodies to science in order for extra credit or...
My body is ready for science.
Exactly. And so I volunteer at every opportunity I can to help science do science. So I'm not against the research aspect of it, but it would definitely depend on what exactly they're tracking and how they're tracking it and how long and security issues and all the other stuff that goes along when you have to submit a research proposal to a school's internal review board for ethical standards and things like that.
So definitely for research, we're okay. And see, because what the university is doing, it makes sense with like they're only requiring it for that fitness class. They're not requiring it for their English class, right? So if you implemented something like this in at a workplace, first of all, I don't think you could, but you could have like it couldn't be a requirement, but it could be an incentive program. And then it's different, right? There's different ways to do this thing. And I wish that more people would do it in every way possible, just so that we could have more data to look at. And I wish that someone would do it just for the sake of having that data to review and kind of integrating that into their, into their work culture, into really looking at what's happening among their employees. Doing something like this because requiring it is so difficult. It does get... Like, I have no problem with what the university is doing, but when we start expanding it and thinking about where it could go, different places, I see tons of red flags, but I'm still excited about the potential of what we could do with it. And I wonder, because I feel, do you feel that wearables are as popular or as trendy as they were even a year ago?
Don't know. I don't necessarily have a pulse. I get it, pulse on the wearable market as much, especially since I don't even pay attention to my own Fitbit anymore. But I think as things like Apple Watch become more available, you're going to see it maybe uptick again. People caring more as the ease of use. Because again, the main reason I don't use my Fitbit is I lost the charger, and nothing else will charge it, and you have to go buy another one, and I sound incredibly lazy and I'm aware of that, but I didn't do it. I put it down and that was it, as opposed to say an Apple Watch, which I've got a million Apple chargers. So I think once the convenience factor is as low threshold as it can be, you're going to see people taking an interest in it. But I think the key word that you used was incentive. And I've got a little story here for you, Josue. So in Washington, D.C., where I live, there's a real huge problem with plastic bags in the Anacostia River. The river choked with plastic bags. And so what the city did is they started implementing an incentive program, I guess, so to speak, that if you brought a reusable bag with you to a grocery store and you use that instead of a plastic bag, you got a 5-cent bonus. So you would basically get it 5 cents off your purchase. But then they realized that didn't do anything. It didn't happen. Nobody cared. So now they have a 5-cent tax. So they're basically punishing people for not using reusable bags. And you've seen this skyrocket in people using reusable bags. And about 50% of the plastic bags in the Anacostia River have gone down. So there's been huge, huge behavioral and social changes made out of this penny tax. And it's so interesting, because when I think about what you said of, incentivizing people to use it, I would be much more likely to go into something, whether it's for research, whether it's for a class, whether it's for, whatever reason, for science, if I see it as an opportunity as opposed to a mandate.
But the reality is the opposite.
Right. Well, in this particular instance, it is the opposite.
Well, I think that there's a lot of research to support that. Like, there's many things that you can find that show that, like, people are more likely to do so. I don't think prolonged use necessarily, right? And I think there's too much research in that to generalize anything. But just, like, off the top of my head, incentives sound always like, yeah, I want to do that. Because you don't want to, like, I think, you know, a potential penalty is obviously not the way to start a relationship, right?
Right.
With anything. But it seems to be more effective. Now, like, once that disappears, will that stay? Like, will you continue to do it if the penalty no longer exists? That's where the issue is.
And that's
if you move somewhere else, are you still going to use your plastic bag? I mean, your reusable bag? Probably not.
Well, I think this ultimately, all this discussion of the Fitbit and health and all of it just comes down to the idea of habits. So habits, of course, being a action that you take, or it can be a thought, that happens repeatedly and often without conscious decision-making. So, for example, driving my car to school, I don't really remember driving there, but I get there and back every time. And it's just something that you do kind of rote, automatic, and without much thinking. And I think that's the reason that they try to get kids to exercise early. That's the reason that high schoolers have PE. That's the reason a lot of these colleges mandate physical education, is this underlying assumption that if we can instill this habit of physical activity in children and young adults, then they'll carry that forward. But the problem is that behavior is contextual. So how you behave in one context does not mean how you're going to behave the same way in another context. For example, one of my favorite examples is that if you're trying to quit smoking, you should do it on vacation. Because that way all the triggers and all the cues that usually push you to action aren't there. You're in a completely different environment, and the norms, quote unquote, and the routines are different. So I think you're exactly right that they can enforce this to try and have a healthier set of graduates. But then after that, what happens? And does it stick with them? Do they continue to be these healthy superstars? Or does it trail off the way we see it, that it does outside of Oral Roberts and any other school? You know, people have their PE requirement and they never run track again.
If you take addictive substances like cigarettes out of the equation and you look at habits, there are a few different numbers, right? But there's like a certain number of days, right, that have been proposed that seem to work for a habit to stick, right?
Some people will swear up and down it's 21. I think pop psychology bunk. But there is, because it's going to vary for every single person, because you can't stick a number on something. But you're right. There is a certain amount of time that you can invest in something to change the behavior.
But then, I mean, the opposite also happens, right? It's like, how many days do you not have to do that thing for the habit to then be broken, or to do it differently for then the habit to change? So
ask anyone who's ever taken a foreign language and then stopped the class. It's really sad.
Yeah. And again, that brings up something like language. You can forget language. Like, that kind of just leaves you, right? But there are things – and no, I guess that's a perfect example. Yeah, anything – you can forget anything. You can forget your native language if you don't practice it. And so how do you keep something going for a prolonged time? I think that incentives, especially in intrinsic incentives, right, can lead to prolonged habit use, forming, following. But I mean, there's so much of this that's like the motivation part is what we haven't talked about. And the reason why you bought a Fitbit and I bought a Fitbit is because we were motivated to track our health or lose weight, become healthier. And these students, like, they're just being told this is a requirement for the class. And really the class must, you know, the school must be aware of that. Like, for the 4 years, this is what they want. But, you know, outside of that, what is your motivation for using a reusable bag, right? I mean, we have that argument at my house all the time. There's reusable bags everywhere, and I always forget them. And sometimes I have one in my pocket. Like, I got these new, like, Chico bags. Have you seen those?
Yeah.
They, like, fold really small. I'm like, I can fit that in my pocket. And then it's so small, I forget. And I already have, like, four plastic bags. Oh, and it's funny. Every time I go to the supermarket around the corner, it frustrates me. Doesn't matter what you buy. They seem to have a policy that it has to be double bagged in a plastic bag.
Oh.
Oh, and every time I'm like, oh, stop. No. Oh. And there's just so many plastic bags. But still, I mean, what would be... I obviously don't care enough, or I haven't seen enough of an effect, especially in my local community, to even think about it enough to really change that habit. And you can apply that to everything. So, like, what is the motivation component of all this?
And that's, I mean, you'll read that every New Year's resolution themed article by any psychologist ever is that the motivation has to come within you if you really want to have a change. You know, if you want to, you know, drop 20 pounds for a bikini season, that might not be as sustaining as I want to lead a healthier life by doing X, Y, and Z. So having really specific, realistic goals is important to maintaining the behavior outside of the context or after the either negative consequence or positive reinforcement has occurred. But that's why so many people struggle with weight is I feel that society puts a lot of value on being a certain way, on having a certain lifestyle, looking a certain way, but it doesn't actively promote that lifestyle. And so it's kind of this catch-22 of, okay, I should be healthy and I should get my recommended 75 minutes of vigorous exercise every week, but I have class and I have work and childcare is expensive and, you know, maybe a lot of people can't afford it, or I have to work two jobs to afford to live where I do, or God forbid I want to spend time, you know, with my family, or there's errands. And it just, it feels like our lives are so consumed with work that we don't ever get to work out. And one of the most interesting things that I've seen happen, especially in the government sector, is if there is, quote unquote, like a gym on site, and employees are given, I think it's something like 45 minutes to an hour every single day to go to the gym. And then they actually receive, I think there's some kind of like health credit or health boost that goes along with it. That might not be in the government sector. I might be thinking of something else. But the idea that carving out time to do this thing and making it available to you and making it incredibly easy to do by having showers and towels and, again, lowering the threshold to where there's almost no excuses can be really beneficial. But again,
I can take four smoking breaks, but if I say that I want to go to the gym for 20 minutes, I'll probably get yelled at.
Exactly. So it's one thing to say, hey, we want there to be this healthier lifestyle. And it's another thing to actually provide the opportunities for people to engage in that lifestyle without having to sacrifice things like having dinner with their family or getting up when before the sun to get their exercise routine done. Some people can. My sister-in-law has two kids, gets up at like 5 o'clock in the morning and does her workout, and it's insane, and she's absolutely amazing, and my hat's off to her. I got up at 11 a.m. and I still feel tired. So it's different for everybody, and I think recognizing that everybody's motivations are going to be different, but everybody needs the opportunity to engage in a new behavior. And it's not just like lack of willpower, like, oh, well, you're fat because you don't care. But as you know, for some people, it's a lot harder.
Yeah. And in terms of weight management in particular, food is so much more important than exercise, like exponentially more important than exercise. You cannot exercise and lose tons of weight just by adjusting your diet. That is way more important for weight management. There are other benefits that you get from being physically active that are fantastic. And it's one of those things like, you know, sometimes you're working with a client and you're like, listen, just try it. Just do a little bit of exercise and your symptoms of depression will, you know, won't be so bad. Like, just try it out. Just see what happens, you know? And some people get it. Some people feel it. Some people understand it, you know, so well that sometimes when they feel down, they're like, I'm going to go for a run because I know that that makes me feel better. And, you know, having that experience is powerful. And yeah, it depends on the context where you're doing it. I don't know that that's the motivation for this school to be doing any of that. It seems to be, I don't know. Again, it's like their holistic point of view for requiring this type of thing. I think that in the scheme of just them always having this requirement, this is a way better way to do it. And it's another $150. That kind of sucks, but it's like a textbook. I don't know. I don't really have a problem with what this school is doing. And I do want to see other people in other places, how they're doing it or how they might do it and how they might F it up, honestly, because the whole BMI thing just sounds horrible.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like so many of the things are at play, and it just sounds like the school is doing it right because they've been doing something similar in an analog form for years. That's not like enough of a motivation for me to tell anybody like, oh, you should check out that school. But I think, you know, I applaud what they've done and the way they've handled the PR around it, because a lot of people have written about this and talked about this, which is really interesting.
So I think what we're saying here is, one, the Fitbit mandatory policy at this school, whether you like it or not, you know, it's fine. Two, behavior change is really, really hard. And if you want to see an effect in the world, you need to help create the context and the environment for that effect to be sustained. I think that's kind of a good summation of my rant. I hope.
It was way less negative than your previous rant.
You know, I try to balance it. You know, everything's about balance. You know, positive, negative, yin and yang. You know, but I mean, that's one of the cool things about, I think, PsychTech in particular, is that you can explore these topics and you can have a knee-jerk reaction and then really dig into, okay, well, why do I feel that way? And what about it evokes those feelings and those thoughts, and kind of counterbalance them. And again, we don't pretend to have the right or wrong answers. These are just, it's like active processing is what we do. And I absolutely love it.
And to allude to potential future episodes that are related to this, I know that there are car insurance companies that can install a device to kind of like track the way you're driving to see if you're a safe driver and give a discount.
Oh, Lord, no.
I once got a pedometer from a health insurance company, and it felt like it wasn't a Fitbit or anything that tracked you, but it was definitely trying to move you in that direction of tracking. And I wonder if any insurance companies are going to go the next step and do the same thing that the car insurance companies did. It's like, oh, well, your behavior seems to be, you know, really good, so you're low risk and we can, you know, give you a discount or stuff like that. So there's many different places for this to go. The motivation piece is huge. You know, having access to something when you're motivated to do it is really important, because that motivation is fleeting. At times, if you don't take advantage of it, then nothing happens. So I think in the future, we can talk a lot about this kind of thing, and hopefully talk about wearables, because I think the question before about, like, are they still trendy? Are they still in? Like, just focusing on, like, what happened at CES. Like, last year, there were still lots of wearables. I think it all peaked with the Apple Watch, and then this year, it's all VR and Internet of Things stuff, so we'll see, but I still think that there's tons of potential.
That's your Josue Cardona future cast.
Yes.
You heard it here on PsychTech.
Yes.
But that's going to do it for this episode of PsychTech. Thank you all for tuning in. As always, you can find us on PsychTechPodcast.com, also on Twitter at PsychTechCast, and let us know what you think. Would you go to a university with that that mandated a Fitbit or other tracking requirement? Would that be a draw for you? Would that be an instant no? We'd love to hear your opinion. So hit us up. We're also on Facebook if that's your jam. And we'll be back next week with a brand new episode of PsychTech.